May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, for you are our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Now I'm guessing that I am not the only one who occasionally falls down the rabbit hole of watching funny videos on YouTube or Facebook, right? You always intend to watch just one video, maybe two, and then all of a sudden it's an hour later and you have no idea how you've watched so many cute cat videos and you're not even really a cat person. Recently, I somehow came across a funny video of a little league coach giving a pregame speech. Now, in the video, it looks like a real coach with a real team on a real sideline, on a real baseball field, with real people milling about in the background. Even though the coach seems to be taking his speech very seriously, I have to assume that everyone knew he was really just trying to be seriously funny. The coach starts out by reminding the kids that this is their last game of the season. And he's trying to get them all hyped up for the game, right? And so he bellows at them, "Do you remember what our goals are every time we step on that field?" And one of the kids yells out, "To do our best." And the coach looks totally defeated. And he goes, "That's not even close. Remember, guys, our goals are to hit dingers, disgrace the pitcher's family, make the other players cry, and stomp their butts into the ground." And everyone cheers. But the coach doesn't stop there. He goes on to say, "Look, fellas, there are two types of people in this world. There are winners, and there are losers. Now, if your dad ever told you that it doesn't matter if you win or lose as long as you have fun playing the game, I'm sorry to tell you, your dad is a loser." Now, that video is totally poking fun at our society's obsession with making everyone feel like a winner. Now, whether you think youth sports should just be about winning every game or about having fun on the field, there's no doubt that this debate reflects a larger conversation within our culture. Because there are so many places in our lives where it seems like winning is what matters most. Whether it's a Facebook feud, or a Twitter war, or a family fight, or a political debate, our culture seems to be obsessed with winning the game or proving someone wrong or at least getting the last word. It may feel like this trend toward division and difference has been amplified in recent years, but apparently even the ancient church fell prey to these same tendencies as well. In Paul's first letter to the Corinthians, it's clear he's gotten word that the church in Corinth seems to be trending toward division and difference. The church is breaking up into factions that are forming around different leaders. Some of the Corinthians are professing allegiance to Paul himself, while others are pledging allegiance to Apollos. Earlier in the letter, Paul mentions there's a whole other faction that's pledging allegiance to Cephas. And Paul is worried that these divisions are distracting the church from their true calling. So Paul tries to bring the church back together by reminding them that the ways of the gospel are not the same as the ways of the world. Paul wanted them to see that the factions forming in the church, factions that demanded allegiance to particular leaders, those kinds of divisions were childish. Jealousy and quarreling, that kind of behavior was for infants, for people who weren't ready for the solid food of mature faith. And the divisions in the church were ultimately a distraction because people were focused on giving credit for the church's success to earthly leaders when in fact it was God who deserved all the glory. As Paul reminded the Corinthians, it didn't matter who planted the seeds of the church's ministries. It didn't matter who watered them. What mattered was that God had been at work in their midst, giving them grace and helping them grow. And so their call, as Paul saw it, was to come together as a community of faith, so that their church could be the very building of God, a place defined not by the values of the world, but by the values of the gospel, a people defined not by division and difference, but by love and by grace. Irenaeus was a church leader who came onto the scene about 100 years after Paul. He too had a lofty vision for the church, a vision for the church to be a place where God's love and grace could be made known in the world. He truly believed that the church was called to be a real place defined by the values of the gospel, a real place that people could go to get a glimpse of God's kingdom. As he said, the purpose of the church was to be a piece of God's paradise planted in the world. I was reminded of that image of the church being a piece of God's paradise when I recently came across a poem by John Rodel. Now, he originally gained notoriety by writing honest and powerful poems and publishing them on Facebook. His poems give voice to the struggles of his faith. He wrote one of his poems after speaking with someone who was convinced that their deceased brother must be in hell because of who he loved. The premise of the poem is that our time on earth is better spent planting paradise while we are alive, instead of debating who gets to enter heaven after we die. This is part of that poem. My love, let us build a heaven in the space that exists between my life and yours. Let us create an endless garden paradise where every single exotic flower is honored. We only have so many heartbeats left inside of us. To waste a single one on deciding who gets to grow like a sunflower under the light of the hereafter, why spend an ounce of energy on deciding who gets to go to heaven when we can spend our lives building it here on earth with the bricks of how we treat each other? Until I hear the harps and see the golden gates, I'm going to consider this world the promised land. And I promise to be as kind as I can be with your heart while we are here together. Friends, as the church, we are called to be a place defined not by the ways of the world, not by division and difference. We are called to be a place where people can see the ways of the gospel at work. A place where people get to see a glimpse of paradise. We are called to be a place where everyone can bring their whole selves, because they know we are a people who will be kind with each other's hearts. My hope and my prayer is that the building of God we call Old South Union Church will always be built with bricks of love and grace. Amen. Friends, our closing hymn is about building this house together. It's an insert in the bulletin for those of you who are here. It's called Let Us Build a House. We're going to sing verses 1 and 2 and then skip to verses 4 and 5. And the words will drop into the comments so that those of you worshiping from home can sing along with us.